How you doing? This is Donnie B. You're listening to Power Rock Podcast with Jim Madonna. So crank it up and peace and love, brothers and sisters.
Hey everyone, Jim Madonna here, your host of Power Rock Podcast. I would like to welcome you all to yet another episode, bringing you the best interviews from around the globe, from indie to mainstream. And friends, today I am super excited for today's guest, because I have on the line the amazing Donnie V of Enough's Enough. Donnie, welcome to the show, man.
Well, thank you for having me.
Donnie, I gotta say, man, that for me, this is a complete honor. I truly mean that, to have you on my show as a rock and roll artist, brother, being on David Letterman, Howard Stern show. I mean, bro, I can't emphasize how humbling this is to be able to have this opportunity to speak to you. And I just want to say,
oh, you forgot America's Most Wanted.
Okay. That's funny, man. All right.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
Thank you,
everything,
sir.
Is something, you know what I mean?
Indeed I do, my brother. Donnie, I want to start out by simply, I want to turn the floor over to you, man. And I want, if you don't mind, to give maybe the listeners some history about Donnie V and what's going on in your life right now, man.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I started out as a small black child, small hope, but a great wonder. And I don't know what happened. So I didn't get a lot of sun because I don't like the sun. And, you know, here I am now, who I am. And it had a bit abusive, kind of a shitty childhood, and so I just lived in a fantasy world of one day everybody's gonna love me, and I, you know, heard music, I heard Beatle records and things like that, and I was like, that threw me to it like a moth to a flame. I was, you know, very young age, so I started singing and learning all these fluctuations and things about harmony. As you know, I didn't know what I was learning, but by the time it came into play, I had all these skills that I had honed from just on the job training of, you know, constantly just living in my imaginary world and singing my butt off and playing, standing in the mirror and playing a guitar and this and that. And, you know, I couldn't play anything. I was a poser, but I knew one day I'd have to learn how to play the damn thing. You know, that was a technicality that came later. It was a pretty, insecure, troubled childhood with a lot of issues. And, as soon as I got to, a point of awareness of medications of different sorts, I gravitated towards those. And, you know, let me start by saying that nobody ever sets out to just say, hey, I think I'm going to be a fuckhead for a living and just destroy everything in mine and everyone around me's life. Nobody decides to do that. It's usually an issue or something, a good time gone awry, something, but that's what happened to me at a very young age. You know, I had to, kind of a typical burnout type adolescence, you know, teens, you know, but everything, I didn't have much of a transitional period from between a little boy, you know, a psychologically undeveloped and emotionally undeveloped little boy to center stage in the spotlight in the middle of a, you know, basically a hurricane, you know what I mean? And in the eye of the hurricane is calm. I wasn't in the eye of it. I was swirling around in the big typhoon waves and tsunamis and this and that. And so everything happened really, really quickly, happened very massively. And it was just, you know, you're yanked out of Palookaville right into the madness. And, you know, and there's a lot of things as far as my songwriting and my style and my development and natural evolution in being a writer and a singer and stuff and musician and stuff that didn't really get a chance to go about it, to do its job. You know, I didn't go about things in the right. It's just like, you know, you look at the Cro-Magnon and then you see all the steps between the monkey and the man. Well, I kind of just went from the monkey to the man, but it's still acting like a damn monkey, you know? So that's what was happening. And musically that was happening as well. And it was just buffoonery at its highest level. Because everybody in the band was a hell of a character. I mean, there's just everybody's crazy out of their minds, you know. And basically, you know, Derek and I personally, Derek Frigo, the guitar player, he and I personally had really no skills for how to, you know, anything, you know, domestication skill, anything. We were, you know, somebody just forgot to raise us. And so, you know, I had my grandfather. Derek had his father, who was very old, and that's what instilled the wonderful nature and spirit and souls that were in both of us. But the propensity for the craziness, you know, was out of this world. You know, it was beyond belief, and it went there, and it just goes from medicating and different tools I'm using to overcome shyness and insecurity to being in the middle of the stage on the microphone and being the singer and all this and that. And that whole band, Enough's Enough, when it took off and everything, yeah, it was great. We were great. You know, everybody was fantastic. It was a four-ring circus, and it was so colorful, and the songs were good, my vocals, and everybody was an amazing player. But, you know, you really didn't have, I believe, the right combination of dudes. We weren't all on the same pages of what we did and what our influences are and what our passions were and our musical tastes, you know. And me being the writer and the singer, you know, kind of took the heaviest part of the business end of that stick. You know what I mean? I got beat with that stick the worst, because I'm like, you know, everything I did, I had something in mind. I had a vision, you know, and then it would go into this machine of these dudes, and it would come out this heavy, noisy thing with some big, fat, amazing guitar solo on it and all these loud, crunchy metal tones and all this stuff. And, you know, it's like we weren't really exploring the music. And so, you know, it's kind of like, you know, you have options of, well, I can walk away from a dream come true and wait for and work hard for, you know, the real dream, you know, or I can buckle up and enjoy this ride and try to do and hang on to your dear life and try to do the best I could. Well, nothing good comes easy. It was fun. It was, you know, I just kind of like went along for the party, and I was a, you know, competent enough writer and singer that just doing good enough for me to get by was actually pretty good as far as anyone else was concerned. But, you know, that's, you know, and I always delivered as far as that, the songwriting and being, playing on performing and everything, this and that, despite all the hell I was putting myself through. I always delivered, but I didn't deliver as far as how I felt that I was capable of delivering and how I felt God's mission or plan was for what I did. And then it's kind of, there wasn't a lot of direction and image and things. We were just kind of getting thrown onto the end of a bandwagon of the end of something else that was going on, that was on its way out. And as opposed to if you're coming out with something new, and we definitely had a new sound and a new thing and everything, that why not be the first guys on the new thing? You know what I mean? Sure. No pun intended. The first guys to do to the new direction. And so, but that, you know, being in the state of mind that I was in, and I wasn't able to roll with the punches and make the right. And, you know, what do? Is this the guy beating your ass or the guy that's, you know, and blowing smoke in it? And sure enough, you know, we went with that, and it was the wrong move. And, you know, you when you follow your nose, you know,
right, exactly.
it's like you turn into a big old, you ever see a toucan fly? Pretty awkward, uncoordinated looking thing flying by. I've seen one before. I was like, what the fuck was that?
That's
big old nose.
That's fucking
nose.
Hilarious, man. Based on what you just said, you know, you had a, you know, you gained success at a very young age, and you know, you've been in this for over 30 years. My question to you is this, man, has there ever been a point in your life where you just simply lost the interest in what you do? If so, what did you do to rekindle your passion for it?
Oh, absolutely. Well, let me readdress that thing you're saying, young age. But Enough's Enough is actually my first band. Most guys are in a bunch of bands and this and that and stuff and work on their chops and stuff. This was, I mean, aside from just playing with, you know, some friends and stuff like that in the basement and, you know, like a corner bar for, you know, a party or something like that. This was my first band with professional guys where things, you know, and so this is, I mean, you're talking a little kid, a little boy, and not to mention how emotionally undeveloped and all the other skills that went along with it. I was a little boy, and I really, you know, just, you know, what happens to little boys when they go around all those creepy guys with all the pockets full of candy. you know, and that's what happened, you know, but,
well, so you're a survivor, man. I mean, you literally were thrown in, into a pack of wolves and had the music industry, the weight of it on your shoulders, and you plowed your way through it.
I was thrown into the ring, but kind of with my hands tied behind my back to face Mike Tyson, okay? So, and then when the guys are tied my hands behind my back are bitching at the end of the fight when we're laying there all bloody and knocked the fuck out, it's like, what the fuck? It's my fault then, you know? It's like, I would get the blame, but everybody else was so right there to eat up all the credit. So that's what, you know, I'm kind of taking years for people to even, I still hear all this, you know, you need to get back with the band. Why do I need to get back with that band? Everything that was cool about that band, besides the great bass playing, I did. That was me. You know what I mean? I wrote it. I sang it. I made the best I could and kept it going and delivered every time. You know, there's many records after those first three. People think that you might have died in a plane crash and stuff, you know, but no, there's another 10 records after, and each one gets better and better. And Strength was an example of, we got a chance to actually work with a good producer who had vision of what he'd seen was the strength of the band, which was the songwriting and taking it to like the George Martin school of exploring the music and the songs. We still were stuck with heavy metal guitars and things like that because we already just came out with the two hits on New Thing and Flying Michelle. So now we've got that stigmatism. We can't just all of a sudden about face on that. So we did a real good job of with Paul. You know what I mean? I never really had, that's the only real time I've ever had a producer. Every other thing I produced myself, all the rest of the records, you know, Chip it likes to say that we produced them ourselves, but I mean, really what you're hearing there and all the ideas and the thoughts besides just straight ahead bass and drums or whatever, you know, it's like, that's all the thought and the passion and, you know, ideas coming out of me. And a lot of it was fueled by substance and stuff, because that just became out of control. That just became, you know, my cross to bear. That's my mission in life is now to suffer for other people's benefit. And so I sang a lot about, there's a lot of passion and there's a lot of meaning and, you know, I was putting my soul into the lyrics and things of my songs and trying to, at least I don't think I'm capable of saving myself, but if I can save some other people, that's worth something. And that's how I lived and made great records. And if I thought that this record doesn't stand up for the last record, I wasn't doing it. It wasn't going out, you know? And so I made sure I delivered every time. You know, any of the other records, like, you know, these little ones that are compiled of, like, this newest thing that Chip just put out, a Clown's Lounge or whatever and stuff, that's old demos and rejects and stuff that didn't make the records, you know, and with, so that he can put his new song on there, and which is what it is, you know what I mean? You know, it's, I mean, a whole lot of things like that go on without my permission. There's nothing I can do about it,
sure.
You know, and he's out doing what he's doing with it, and I love Chip, and I'll always have, you know, history and brotherhood with Chip, because we look what we did, and we've been through together and everything, but I don't agree with a lot of where he's coming from in his head. I don't know if he quite even really knows. I think it's a lot of acts of desperation and lack of, you know what, I'm not going to touch that anymore. I'm going to leave that alone.
That's
no good riffing on, you know what I mean, but it is what it is. I think that all does the talking. Yeah, here's what happened. I reached a point, I'm not in the band anymore. I've had my heart broken a few times because my life hasn't lent itself to any kind of quality relationships or love. Anybody worth a shit wouldn't, you know, would just come to try to help me and try to fix me, think they could fix me and end up their life trashed and fucked up. And I'd tell them ahead of time, say, hey, listen, you sure you want to do this? I wouldn't do it if I was you. I'm fucking crazy. I'm a mess, you know? It's like, I don't think this is going to work out how you plan, but you know, it's like, and then the other ones that were comfortable where I felt more were pieces of shit that was just, you know, more of my downfall, just putting two heads together to make a bigger ass of herself, you know? And so I had very, very unlucky with love. I didn't have a whole lot of close personally, and people think that, you know, oh, Chip and you're such brothers and stuff. Yeah, we love each other and everything like that. But there's a line that was drawn that no one would come inside of. And it was a very lonely life. You can be around a million people and still be lonely as hell. And that's basically how I lived a lot of my life. You can hear it in my songs and you can hear it in everything. And I wouldn't go around my family because I just felt like I was polluting that family. And I want the best for my family. If I couldn't give them everything in the world, I could at least not poison the wonderful things they did have. And it turned out I was wrong on that because it's now like lately, but I'll get to that. I reached a point not very long ago, maybe about three, four years ago, where I just had enough. I did that White Album record. I sat there and did that all by myself, high as shit, on all kinds of stimulants and sangria, cigarettes, and, you know, God forbid, food or anything like that, or a shower or any sleep. No, that didn't. But I did everything myself, and I really enjoyed myself doing that. But I cleared out the cobwebs and cleared everything out of the basement and the closet because all the little ideas and things I had still left in my mind and in my creativity. And I felt it was, and I felt like it was a last breath. I felt like when this is over, when I'm done with this, I think I'm going to die. I think that this is the end. And there was other personal tragedy going on in my life that I won't go into that was very, very tragic. And so like I started off with this, you know, this song, Unforsaken, it's on that record, and if that plan for that, this is it. This is going to be the last song. And if you listen to that song, I should have sent it to you, but you can listen to it on YouTube or whatever. If you listen to that song, it says it all. It basically says where I'm at, you know, and I thought that was it. And so after that record was done and I finished it, I just was so exhausted emotionally, physically, mentally, everything, and drained. And just could not find joy in life anymore. I could not find any joy. Nothing really rattled me. Nothing, you know, my best friend could die. That wouldn't faze me. I could win $1 million. That wouldn't faze me. And I ended up one day just saying, you know what, I'm too big of a, you know, I can't take my life. I can't do that. I've died a few times, like I was telling you before, and it wasn't meant to be. So, you know, I came back and. But this time it was like, I can't do that because it's, you know, this, I know that the after world is all hell. This is a blink of, this is not even a blink of an eye. This is a blink of a fucking gnat's eye compared to what, and that's not even close to what happens when we finally leave these vehicles that we roll around in, you know, they're called our human bodies, you know, our energy and our spirit and our soul or whatever, for lack of a better word. You know, most things that are unexplained are due to lack of a better word. That you put a label on something and people are like, I don't believe in that. I don't believe in this and that. Well, if you could get a taste of what I saw and what I experienced in my life and everything, you'd change your, I wish I could bottle it and give it to people because it would just change everything that they think and feel. But in any case, I had some problems and issues with a dark, I'm not going to tell you, go into very much detail on how this happened, but even a dark entity, was in contact with a dark entity and it found its way into, and that's, those are usually the people that they find themselves in. They come in as a friend. They come in as in disguise. And next thing you know, everything you ever experience with something the supernatural that's is of that nature of a dark and not a good place is you're always seeing everything in hindsight. You never recognize anything as at the time that it is. You always, because that's a tricky bastard because it's got all the advantages. You know what I mean? Find it to beat the shit out of it with something. You know what I mean? And it's swinging in air, but I mean, you can hear it. I could see it. It's following me around these little, and so I don't want to go much into that because I don't give it attention and anything that's feeding it and that gives it strength and it manifests. But, you know, there's some crazy shit out there. But what happened was, I truly, now looking back at the point where I just decided, you know what, I'm gonna eat a handful of these and a handful of these, and I wash it down with 3 jars of this, and however things roll, I'm not setting out to kill myself, you know, I'm just out to alter the course that I know however this goes down, there's no way I will be where I'm at in the situation that I'm in right now, so. I will either be, you know, I'm leaving this, the roll of the dice, let's just strike this one up as the overdoing it. You know what I mean? little intentional overdoing it, but, you know, it is what it is. And that wasn't in the cards. And I just found myself in a new position, and but still in that, what had happened, and I can see it in pictures. I can see it in video footage. I can feel it. See it looking back now and trying to tour or trying to do solo performances and play my songs with people that love me and love this song and are so happy and this and that. And now not one song idea, which is the most rarest thing in the world for me, is not to have any ideas, nothing, just dry. And I've never been even close to that. I could whip something out of a hat. I could write a song about this conversation right now, you know what I mean? But at this time, I'm looking back and I said, you know what happened? I think my soul or my spirit had just had too much, and this was too unpleasant of a place for it to live. And my soul, it moved out, and it left me. And you can see it, and it makes perfect sense. I can see it. That's my energy was not there. The energy that who is me, that who has been that, you know, that creative, colorful character. And even through the partying and everything, I've always felt, you know, behind this mask, I'm wearing a frown, but I still kept the, had the smile, and made the, it was gone. It wasn't there. You can, there's nothing in my eyes. It was lifeless. My face, it was like, saw something. Like, what the fuck? Look at that. And I'm trying to go down and get all those pictures off the internet now. It's like, yeah, you know? And
well, Donnie, you know, I want to say this, man, and help me out here, brother. But, you know, based upon what you have stated, you have lived, let me reiterate that, you know, I had lived a horrible life for 30 years with substance abuse and so on and so forth. But what I want to say to you is this, and please clarify this for me, man, is that you lived a life pretty much that you were basically miserable, and yet you put lyrics on paper and sang songs, wrote songs that actually inspired people through your own pain. Is that?
Well, that's what I was saying. As I said before, I just got to a point where I said, you know, this is hopeless and pointless. I really have no desire to, you know, because being trying to be sober and stuff like that, you know, in a life where you're so frustrated and aggravated and depressed about things and nothing, it's like, and still, you know, I mean, basically a little boy that just started, you know, I mean, yeah, you pick up when you just find sobriety, you pick up back where you lost your sobriety. And so, like, basically a little boy that just, you know, and I didn't have even the inspiration or the motivation that I couldn't find to just go through all of that hell and, you know, the hard work that would be involved in that. And it's like, for what? You know, you go through all that for what? So that I can just feel everything and all this frustration and bullshit. At least I'm distracted with, you know, altering, you know, mind all these substances and alcohol and this and that. But then again, you know, but yeah, I just got to the point I said, listen, there's no hope for me. There's no hope for me. And I'm so fucked up. I forgot to die. I was supposed to die a long time ago. And being one, you know, one of those guys that, oh, he's a genius, and then he died. I'm so fucked up, I even forgot to die. You know what I mean? So it's like, here I am still dragging my carcass across the face of the earth. Like, you know, at least, you know, I sang about what I knew about. I sang about what hurt. I sang about what was real. And it's like the words did not necessarily, I don't know if they come from me. I don't know if they come from God. I don't know where they come from, because I didn't really ever think of myself as that bright of a guy to have written done a lot of things that I have done. I've never.
Do you think that that is that dark side that you were referring to earlier? Do you think that that's that dark side speaking to you, telling you that
Who knows? No, I think that was the lazy, pass the buck, lazy ass speaking to me, saying, why bother go doing all this? Why go try to do all this and that? That's all hard work. When you can, you know, it's like you're just, it's, you know, and then there's the insecurities and all my issues from my childhood and from who I actually am underneath all this. It's very insecure and very, you know, it's like I never, like I look back at those, you know, I look back through my life and I look at the pictures and stuff like that and I'm saying, Jesus Christ, I'm a fucking cute motherfucker. You know, no chicks were, they're going to shit and say, I didn't even know that. I didn't even think that. That was the last thing I thought of. I thought I was just hell on wheels, you know, just a fucking terror. And, you know, and didn't even, you know, concern myself with that kind of shit. There's all these, you know, but it's like insecurities and stuff. And so that's all that was piling up and telling me, you know, this is, in trying to rationalization of this is your cross to bear. Look at it on a very, very less, very, 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 I hate even saying this because John Lennon got in trouble with it, but look what Jesus did. Look how his cross to bear, what he did. Or, you know, so why are you no better than Jesus? So, yeah, this is very possible that God intended for you to suffer and help others. And so that worked for me. That meant that mindset rationalized and it made sense. It made the addict and the lazy side of me that, you know, that is the human being. You know, we have a spirit. We have a soul. For lack of a better word, which is our energy. I have a lot of high energy, very passionate, very impulsive, very colorful and interesting. But we all are in the vehicles of a human being. You know, I think we come from different places. It's like, that's why some people are so much different than others. And some people are capable. Like I'm capable of doing things nobody can do, but I'm not very good at doing things that everybody can do. You know what I mean?
Sure. So,
like what's that all mean and everything, but the darkness, yeah, I don't have a whole lot of theory. I do know it's there. I do know beyond the shadow of a doubt because I've dealt with it firsthand, and like I said, I don't want to go into that. I don't want to give that any publicity or any attention, but yeah, it is there. It is beyond a shadow of a doubt there, and it will creep in. And like people call addiction a disease. I don't think so. I don't think it's a disease. I think it's a dark entities taking advantage of weaknesses and flaws to work its way in and to take away and to destroy as many of God's little lambs as it possibly can. Which makes perfect sense because that's what it's always been written in the scriptures of that's what he said he would do. You know what I mean? And
I do.
And I'm not, you know, I'm not a Bible thumper. I am not. I don't subscribe to any particular religion. I prescribe to there I go with that. with higher power, there is a higher existence, a higher power, peace, love, harmony, compassion, and understanding to work the way that the plants and the air and the water and the trees and the animals all did on this earth before man came along with agendas and buffoonery to fuck everything up. So it's like you got to get back to a simpler truth. I believe that in all these different religions and all the things that are written in these books and stuff like that kind of throw people off, and it's kind of more of a turnoff to God and of what it truly is. Than it is for anybody with any kind of logical, common, you know, logical, sensible mind. You know, you read all these things, and it's like, this is bullshit. This guy, oh, yeah, he did that for me. Oh, yeah, there's this guy. He lived to be 976 years old, and he's responsible for the, that explains the hillbillies, right? You know, all the incest that went into it. So, I mean, it's like, you know, and all the different religions say, you're damned for doing this, you're damned for doing that, you're damned, and you're damned for looking at that kick the ass and saying, man, I'd still sure like to lick the chrome off that bumper. You know what I mean? Hey, God made everything. God made it all. And if he didn't mean for it to be, if God didn't make it to be so beautiful, why the hell did he make it look so good?
I couldn't all disagree with you anymore, man. I mean, dude, I would have never thought that you would, you know, share in depth your story, because I want to share something with you, and whether I keep it in this interview or not is, you know,
you might as well, man.
Our stories.
Whip it out.
Our stories.
We'll put our dicks out in this interview. Let's put them out.
Let's do it, man. Because here it is, man. You know what? Our stories are extremely, there's a great deal of similarities, except I wasn't a rock and roller. You know, I come from an Italian descent, brother. You know, I was drunk at the age of 9. My first line of cocaine was 14. My first line of heroin was 17. And, dude, it didn't stop for 30 years, man. I hated myself. You know, I couldn't figure out what in the world was my problem. You know, I'm incarcerated.
But people, right? You were still loved other people, and you it was just yourself you were killing and beating the shit out of. But as far as everybody else, and obviously you have people in your life that seen and probably have always said to you, he's such a great guy. If he just wouldn't do this shit,
yep.
He just wouldn't do that. He's such an amazing dude, you know. And that's, you know, you and me are no different than, you know, millions and millions and millions of people on this earth. It's, you know, we're born perfect. We're born perfect. But then life does its thing. And everybody has their own story. And in the end, when the story comes to an end, you can look back and play it back. And you can see why everything happened and what was the meaning in it. And whether it's pleasant for you to know the meaning or not. You can see where and that's what life is all about. It's not about us.
Right.
It's not about us at all. It's about harmony and peace and just compassion and meaning and fulfilling your job and your purpose, like the bees, for, you know, the bees come and pollinate this, or a monkey eats this and he shits over here and that tree grows here. It's all about that. And we've gotten so far off track of all that, and everything's become so fucked up in this world that just, you know, trying to have a good time or trying to feel bullshit and negative feelings and things like that for one reason or the other, for lack of, the world it's been on a decadence for a long time. Like our parents, the baby boomers, they dropped the ball on us. We had grandparents, you know, we were all fucked up, and that's the biggest generation of fucked up, you know, and now what the fuck it is. But everybody, you know, everyone has their spirit and their energy in them. Some people, I'm beginning to think there are some people that kind of don't have, but that, you know, there's got to be sheep and cattle as well, you know, because you got to eat, you know, you know, so, but there's ones that, you know, have extra this or extra that. There's others that are the worker bees and this and that, and it has to makes the product and life go on. I mean that, but everybody has their own unique, you know, nobody's any better or any worse or any greater or any less significant on this earth in their story, in their mission, in their job. Some of us, our jobs are just maybe a little more difficult or maybe a little more extreme, but with the added frustration, aggravation comes all these other experiences that other people. So it's a give and take, and you experience things that nobody blows people's minds. You sit in an NA meeting and you try to tell one of my stories. Yeah, people fucking eating popcorn and shit, you know, fucking listening up like, holy shit, tell another one, you know. It's like, man, it sounds like I'm glorifying shit, but I'm not. But yeah, I mean, it's our energy that's in us gets fucked with. Energy, you know, just energy of anything. You take electricity, you know, you throw water on it or something like that, it fucks it all up, makes it all act fucking destructive, shit like that. You take the air, the oxygen, you take some particles out of it, and look what it turns into, like fucking, you know, fucking poison or whatever the shit, you know. I mean, it's just all energy. We are energy, and that's in our soul, and that's the word they've chosen to use. And it's a shame they just can't come up with a better, more universal, simpler one simple truth that everyone can agree on, and then everything else can be tradition and whatever they want to do, your own thing, you know what I mean. But just the one simple truth, that we would have a lot less of the issues that we have in this world of listen, it's all about working together. It's all about working like the elements, like working with everything else that we are fucking up. And we don't do that. And too many people with agendas take too much more and leave some with so much less and cause misery and this and that for your happiness and greed and all of these traits that come from, who knows if they're just the dark things might feed on those a little bit more or whatever, or just, you know, there's just things that come from other places that are hungrier and selfish and just devour and gobble it up. But, you know, we're all, everybody has a common story when it comes to addictions or it comes to despair. And it's a very, like, I've been in a rehab with 100 people, close to 100 people. I went there after that botched, you know, suicide or whatever the hell you want to call it, and found that everybody in this place, as they started coming out of it, started opening up and started sharing and doing the work, that, wow, this is like, these people here are talented and amazing and have substance and things like much more than a lot of people that I meet, and definitely so much more than what they're credited for and what their family and their loved ones and everyone around them has has written them off to be at this point, you know what I mean? And they start coming out. I'm like, I just want to tell you guys, I've known billions of people all over the whole world, and you guys are awesome. You guys are fucking great. I love you guys, and there's so much to you, and I hope you know this, and I hope that you know, and it's just, that's our job, is we have to do the work. We have to not rationalize it. We have to not just be lazy and you know, and because God will keep beating you in the fucking ass, beating your ass with it, right, punching you in the fucking head. And so, but we don't recognize it as that. We don't see it as that. We look at it as a shitty life, bad luck, this and that. It ain't that. It's our job to fix, it's to get it right. You know, some of us don't have it as great as others, you know, emotionally or mentally, this and that. So it's our job to do the best job we can with what we are given to work with. And that's what I've always believed. And for a short period of time, I wasn't able to do that. But now I'm firing on all cylinders for the first time in my life. I just got rid of hepatitis C. I took a couple of years in a drug treatment program, basically court ordered, because I had some warrants and things. And, you know, my past caught up with me. I ended up in this drug program and arrested and in jail and all this shit. And it was a godsend. It was the prayers that I was praying before it happened, when I was praying to God coming back from Europe, saying, God, this don't work for me anymore. Take me home, fix me, do whatever you gotta do, even if it's terribly unpleasant. And that's what happened. As soon as I walked off the plane, they were waiting for me.
Brother, I gotta say, man, the more you talk about this, you know, we are talking my story. You know, when you talked about a godsend, you know, when you had warrants and, you know, they were waiting for you. And, you know, I had said, you know, I was on a rip and run for so many years. And, you know, at first, you know, I cursed the police, you know, I was madder than hell at the law. But, you know, I came to a point that, you know what, I wasn't arrested. I was rescued, man, because left to my own devices, I was going to kill myself. You know, today, 14 years, you know, I'm clean and sober. I cherish that, man. I truly cherish that.
And well, you should. And, you know, and like I don't know if your illness is something that you're making public or whatever, but I believe that you're going to be okay. And I believe that that's God slowing you down and God giving you the motivation and the abilities to look at, live in the day, live today, live for all of the wonderful things and people and everything that are here today that you've been ignoring and abusing and this and that, and experience, because there's so much wonderfulness in every single day. And you don't feel like that when you're fucked up and you're jonesing, or you're this and that, or you're hurting, or you're looking for this, you're looking for that, or shit's coming down on your head, this and that. You feel like life sucks. Right. This world sucks. Life sucks, this and that. Well, it's just, we suck. We got, you know,
exactly.
It's basically,
exactly,
we got to find home, our way back home. And I got a song I just put up on my page called On My Way Back Home. And that was, you know, I wrote that, it, you know, and that's at one of the height of, you know, my drug and alcohol and stuff, you know, it's hard to say the height, because that height plateaued for quite some time. But, you know, I mean, you listen to all, everything going on in there, and that's a completely fucked up dude writing and creating and producing and singing and all. He took over all the guitar, everything at that point, and it's doing all that. And you listen to the messages, you know, and a lot of them are you know, you can always tell basically what's going on with me by what you hear in my songs these days. Right. And like the new stuff that I'm doing now, it's like I thought it was over, and it's not over. And I thought that I wouldn't be able to find all those great ideas because I was living on, you know, about three moons past Jupiter,
right?
You know, and that's where all the ideas were. I would just grab them with butterfly nets and drag them in and turn them into songs and stuff. But it's not like that. I'm smarter. I'm using my intellect more for the immediate and what I'm doing at the time, as opposed to damage control and hindsight and empathy. You know, and I still have empathy, but I just, my message now is not to all the, you know, it's, I've had a lot of messages to the broken and to the hurting and to the lost and stuff. And now my message is to, you know, of empathy. Now it is, okay, looking, this, if this fucking lunatic can do it, here's what's waiting for you. if you find your soul and you find your higher, and you know, and people say, I don't believe in God, I don't believe in this. You don't have to believe in God as a word or a person or a thing, but if you think this is all about you, and then you just came here and you started from some little sperm cell egg, and you're everything you are is because of you. You're fucking on sniffing airplane glue, man. But this is, we come into this world, our energy comes onto this earth, into these bodies, as you know, like who it is and what it is. Now, what happened, what we do to it during the course of our lives, is kind of up to us. But it's steered and it's directed, and it's allowed for things to happen, and it's allowed for us to make mistakes, because that's the only way you learn from anything. And when we come out of it, and guys like you and me, Jim, when we come out of this shit finally, and hopefully there's still a couple of years left to go, we are so much better and useful, and have so much more passion and appreciation, and are all about connecting and sharing that with everyone else, and more able to do that because we've got the street creds. We're not this guy that learned it in a book. We didn't learn it in this classroom. We're not the police. We're not this and that. We're the fucking hardcore guys who steal your grandma's purse for fucking crack money, you know, shit, fucking bail out and fucking, you know what I mean? All this shit, ride the bicycle with no tires.
That's
right. Go get fucking heroin or whatever the fuck it is.
That's
right. You know, we're those dudes. We're those dudes.
Ah, yeah. I was one of those guys that, you know, steal your wallet and help you look for it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm talking about.
I bet that was you, you bastard. I ever run across you? That my shit's been stolen a lot, and they made me think I'm crazy. That band would do that to me. Steal my drugs, and then make me think I'm crazy while I'm looking all over for it. And I go, no, I just set it right down here, you piece of shit. And then they go in. I hear this story. So that's what happened one night. I finished the show. I bought an 8-ball of cocaine. So I bring it, I go into the back of the bus, and I'm all set. I got my guitar set. I'm going to write some songs. I thought I was in that vibe. I was in like a fifth or sixth wind, you know, where I've been up for days. And so it's like, it's not just tweaking me out. It's fueling the madness, you know. And I like that. I used to like that zone because it was very productive as far as creativity-wise. It was very destructive as far as everything else. But so I set the 8-ball down. I turn around to grab my guitar. I turn back around, it's gone. I'm like, what the fuck? I start looking around, I go, Skip's back there, he's up and turning the thing. You're fucking just too high, bro. You always think that you lost the job. I go, don't even try it, motherfucker. I know I just set this in. Everybody's turning, helping look around for it. And I see his wife was on the bus. I see his wife on the bus. She's like going back and forth into the bathroom. She's tweaking her brains out. So I see his ex-wife. She passed away, Michelle. I love Michelle dearly. But if Michelle had her mouth shut, then she was tweaked out of her fucking mind. She wasn't saying shit. And I go, where'd she get that? So they stop the bus at a diner and it goes in. Everybody goes in to eat except me. And I just go to the fucking money strong box thing where all everything's kept, and that's in Chip's bunk. My motorcycle key happened to fit that motherfucker. So I picked that lock. I got in the strong box. There's my cocaine. There's 2 ounces of cocaine given by this one guy that we knew. So here's for the guys on the road, so they don't have to go buying shit and going crazy and stuff. There's all these pills, all his weed, chili. I took fucking everything. I took everything to close it back up. I'm sitting back there writing my song off my ass off, smiling shit. He comes in and he's looking at me, this look on his face and his wife's face. Everybody's looking at me like, you mother. And I'm like, what? What? They couldn't say shit to me because right. They're lying motherfuckers. Fucking, oh, how could I have taken what wasn't there?
Right on. Man.
You know?
Exactly.
And make a long story short, I wrote the fucking paraphernalia record, pretty much most of it, in the back of the bus that night with Ricky Parent sitting there playing drums on it, because he was smart. You know, if you sit there and hang with me, then he gets some props on the tunes and shit. And I loved Ricky. And he was like probably my favorite other person that was ever been in the band with me. God rest his soul.
Donnie, I want to get to some of your music. And the first track I want to talk about is a song called Dissonance. Could you give the listeners some history about that song?
Yeah, it was uh, It was, I had been out of the band. I went and got married, and this had, I was just too fucked up. I was on everything. I couldn't tour anymore, so I couldn't get permission to go on methadone or this and that, taking pills and all this shit with me. Just too much fucking bullshit. Plus, it wasn't really, unless we were on, like, big tours of Poison or something, which we would do, unless those were going down. Tuesday night in Tulsa, Oklahoma, to 40 people and shit like that. It just wasn't worth it to me to sit on that bus and go through all that hell. And it was just destructive. And I was just deep, you know. So I met my ex-wife on the road, and she promised to make it all. She was one of those who's going to help fix me. Seeing the something in me that no one else sees, you know what I mean? Sell for that shit. I'm going to help you. I'm going to fix you. Take you away. Bring you to LA. Live with me. I'm going to take care of you. So I asked her, I said, you know what, you marry me? And she said, you know what, and it was on Christmas Day. She goes, I've only had a dream since I was a kid that somebody would be asked to be married on Christmas Day. Of course I will. It's a sign. It's an open.
Right.
So we got married. I knew her for like 3 weeks. She got married.
Nice.
Oh, my goodness. How fast that went downhill. And then we still spent another 5-6 years together in misery to a point of where somebody's writing notes and leaving them in their desk if anything should happen to me. You know, he pushed me down the stairs or you know, something like that, you know. So it got crazy. But I tried going out to Vegas because we were doing a VH1 thing of getting the band back together thing, and it was a story for VH1 was doing. I said, all right, I'll come back and do that. And we got Vicky Fox came back, and Derek had passed away, so we couldn't have him. So it was Johnny Monaco. And so what happened was, kind of put a little spark of life into something. Somebody came along, put some money, said, hey, so I want to throw some money in to try and put you guys back together and make a new record. Well, that was a bunch of buffoonery. The guy was an idiot. Chip and him were running the show. They're both idiots. Fucking, it's all this shit was fucking going crazy. It's like nobody was listening to me again. I started doing my thing again. I started getting high and stuff because I'm frustrated. I'm aggravated. So now no one's giving me any respect or credibility. Because I'm high, but I'm still the guy that wrote every single thing. I'm the guy that's kind of doing anything that's worth a shit here, but nobody's ever treating me like a big piece of shit, killing my fucking self-esteem and killing my, you know, my confidence. So I'm starting to fucking choke and stuff. I'm shaking and this and that. I finally just went, we just called it and just said, this is fucked up. I caught them lying about some shit, major shit, and trying to pull a fast one on me again. I was like, you know what? Fuck you. Still fuck you from the last time, you know, you've never changed and fuck all this. And you wonder why I'm, you know, and what I am. And so then I went back and broke up. Me and my wife broke up. I thought it was the end of the world. It was, everything is just, you know, had just come crashing down. Listen, I tried to get back in my band. That didn't work. And these guys, so there's no hope of that anymore. So what am I supposed to, I'm all by myself. And so I'm going to start all over from scratch. I said, well, you know, and I happened to meet somebody. And very young person and very young girl, very delightful, beautiful, sexy, funny, everything. Built my confidence back up, built me up. And within 2-3 months, well, within about 2 months, I had written that whole the whole Dissonance record, except for the bullshit you hear on there that I had no say-so in that going on there.
Right.
I wrote the bulk of the record as a transition of half of it is adios to you and hello to you. You know what I mean?
I do.
But there was inspiration and there was motivation. And there was life, and I was coming back, and I was starting to clean up my act and stuff. Later on, the girl ended up having a very serious life threatening illness, and it's been a sad situation and to a heartbreaking ending. But in any case, that Dissonance, that song personally, was me getting in the studio on my own dime, which just went back on my own. But just me and a guy came called Vinny Castaldo, who owns a studio. Forget the name of his studio now, but it's in Vegas. And Vinny is an amazing drummer, amazing dude, very musically, plays songs on the drums, not just drum parts in the stands. Very smart. And one of my favorite guys I've ever actually worked with, him and Jakey Lee. Jakey Lee was there too. And we just started. And CJ Zuder was actually there for a little while too. CJ, I don't know if you know who he is. He was in a band called The Blue and some other band, I forget. But he's one of my best pals and shit. And he's done some stuff on my solo records, like some harmonies and guitar stuff. But just me and Vinny, you know, on our own, without the buffoons there, with a guitar and a drum set in the studio, just getting able to jam out and explore these ideas that I had all of a sudden they start turning into exciting things. And I was like, this is what it's all about. This is fucking happening. I love this. So I could, you know, we recorded that at Dissonance, Joni Lynn, Great Ballads by my ex-wife, Altered States, High, what else was there? Some Lazy Daisy. These are, you probably don't know all these, but these are great fucking, that's my favorite Enough's Enough record. And, cause it was the first one back from like 6 years. And it came out, you know, it was going to be Peter at, into something terribly lame, cause they were going to, I was hearing talk of them taking that bullshit washed up session that we had tried to earlier, and we're going to put that out as, Lost in Vegas or some shit. And I was like, that can't happen. That can't happen. That's not a representation of what I've got to offer after all those years and coming back with that bullshit, you know? And so that fire got in my ass, and thank God I came out there, and God put the, gave me those songs and that girl and this and that, and brought me back to life, and Vinny Costello, and we all got fucked on it. We all got fucked. Because the buffoons come back into the picture and go to get and say, oh, this is great. This is right. Now we got something. Yeah, yeah. And take it over as if it was theirs, like the last project that they fucked up, and to take that and they go and do shit and take all the money, take all the credit, do all this and that, and still, and everything's all fucked up. And here I am, you know, once again, the same old fucking story. And so I came out with a kind of a fire thinking there might be some hope for this. We got some new musicians to tour live because Vinny and Jakey weren't going to do it live because it wasn't really worth their time. And, but it just turned to what it was, you know. It's just the same thing. People, you know, blaming me for everything, giving none of the respect for why you're even out here doing this, why you get to come out and play all around the world and make, even if you're not making that much money, you're staying in nice hotels, you're in meeting all these fans, you're in this country, you're in that country, you're in this country, you know what I mean? And what would you be doing? You'd be at home selling real estate or, you know, playing top 40, whatever the fuck else, you know, and God only knows what else, you know. And so none of that, nothing like that, just oh, you. Yeah, because I was fucking pissed off. Guys didn't want to record new stuff. Guys didn't want to rehearse and learn all this great shit that we have. We have fucking hundreds of songs on 13 albums, you know, to play from. And plus, I just made a solo album that wrapped around my middle finger, which is a fantastic album because nobody else wanted to make it Enough Snuff record, so I went and did one by myself, and it came out great. And nobody wants to play that because it's all it's Donnie, 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 Donnie. Yeah, well, goddamn right, it's Donnie, 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 because that's that guy that does everything.
Well, we're gonna get. Maybe I make them. We're definitely gonna get to that song wrapped around my finger. But what I want to do is I want to let the listeners hear Dissidents with Donnie V on Power Rock Podcast. Crank it up.
Call the EMs, we're coming down the plane. scratching down my back. Now it's like the scratching across the chalkboard. See, my hair stands on ends.
This is dissonance, man!
All right, welcome back. We are with Donnie V of Enough's Enough. And Donnie, I got to tell you, man, what a well-written, well-arranged song, man. Very powerful.
You hear the anger. You can hear the anger. That's not your typical whiny, cutesy little Donnie V vocal in that. You hear the anger on the guitar. I did all that guitar, right, those parts and stuff, and the vocal. It's like just angry and mean, you know? It's like I just liked it. I really loved it. I thought it's like one of my favorite Enough's Enough tracks as far as the heavy stuff goes.
It is awesome. Donnie, I want to ask you this, man. What is, I mean, we've talked and you've covered a lot of aspects of your life. However, what is one piece of advice you would give yourself 20 years ago?
Run from the fun.
Works for me, man.
Plain and simple. Run from the fun.
Run from the fun. All right, brother. The next track I want to talk about is called My Love. Can you give us some history about that one?
That's a song that, it was like I said, I was dealing with some tragedy, losing someone very dear to me. But it's not the first time that's happened to me in my life. I've lost a lot. So I put it into... I generalized it, and I'm also a lot of these songs that I put out of with this message, I'm singing to myself as well.
Okay.
And I always keep that in mind that I'm like the number one person, maybe not number one, but I'm lumped in like I'm singing this to myself. It's like, you know, if you try to hear this message, that's how I get it so passionate to connect with other people. My love, really sad time, really sad state of mind, and knowing and sharing that with loved ones who are in an even sadder state, and just giving this, you know, this the words that I know would mean that I know would mean so much to hear to me from someone if I'm in that state of mind, and you know, it's like I've never been able to. You know, I've given everything I have away. Everything, you know, I don't care about possession. I don't care about money. I just care about, you know, not having to worry and care about my loved ones and this and people and stuff. And so that's, it's like, you know, I got, this is what I have to give, and this all I, and I give you this, and it's, you know, I'll stand there, stand in hell with you.
Right on. You know, it's a very heartfelt song, you know, compared to the other songs that we're going to play. You know, it's very, of course, it's a ballad, and, you know, it's, I would call it a ballad. It's one of your mellower stuff.
It's a ballad. It's a heartfelt song of passion and comfort, you know, and it's one of my favorites in that department, you know.
And let's go ahead and let the listeners hear My Love with Donnie V on Power Rock Podcast. Donnie, you know, again, I can't say enough about that song. You know, you spoke from your heart, man, and it's I love the explanation that you had given about that song. You know, it's tight. I appreciate the honesty that that you're expressing on this show, because just a lot of people are sugarcoat this shit, and you know, I know that you're keeping it real, man.
What you see is what you get with Donnie Mee. You always have.
Right.
What you see is what you get. You love it or don't love it, but you can't accuse it of trying to play games and be phony. You know, it's like, and believe me, you know, it's the band has done a lot of interviews that were very uninformative. You know what I mean?
Right.
And those were never done by me. You know what I mean? When I tell it like it is, I call a duck, a spade, a spade, you know, and a couple other things, you know what I mean?
Right. But, what do you think is, what is one of your most memorable enough shows?
Oh, God, there's been so many great ones. There's been, you know, there's so many fantastic ones.
What is one that really kind of stands out, in your mind, in your memory? What is there any one particular show that you could say, you know, Jim, I was somewhere, you know, and this happened to me? I mean, could you put a finger on that?
There's some that'll stand out in my mind, bigger or smaller, for different reasons. I mean, for example, like my 23rd birthday at the sold out second night of the Marquee in London, where the Beatles and everybody had played and stuff. You know, that was like and opening a bottle of champagne and jam packed place with MTV and everything, fucking singing Happy Birthday to Me, and you know, shit like that, or playing like the first time at the World Theater, you know, in Chicago. You know, the big place where you go to see all the big bands, or Alpine Valley, where I sat and watched my first concert, Rush concert, from the tree, and looking back at that tree and seeing a jam pack with people and seeing a kid sitting in that tree and say, wow, I'm here. I'm on this motherfucker now. And look at, you know, I always thought I'd get there, and, you know, and things like that. And then there's some shows where it's just, I kind of had it more together and just fell into a zone and really connected and just sang and felt the song so well. There's shows like that. It's there's a New Year's Eve with Def Leppard in our hometown at the Rosemont Horizon. You know, that's a great, you know, those guys jamming with us at soundcheck and shit. And, I played with so many great shows, so many great bands, had so much fun and took a lot of it for granted and didn't live a lot in the moment as much as I should have. There's so much that got lumped into one big like memory, unless somebody mentions something that can stir the, make something stand out, big fucking one big ass concert, you know, of certain years and shit like that. And that's nobody's fault but mine. It's, shit, you know, playing Janie Lane, dear friend, a wonderful guy, sweet guy, singing Let It Be at his memorial concert. There's this, you know, not being with the band for some years and going up with Steel Panther with Derek and Vic. Again, after Chips Enough wouldn't let me in the building for the Enough's Enough show, and then Steel Panther plays after, and then letting me in the building, and not only that, but calling me and Derek and Vic up to do New Thing and Fly High Michelle for the whole crowd and everything after not being in the band for 6 years. That's another one. There's so many, it's hard to say. I think that the most memorable will be the next time that I hit one. I've also, in this recovery program I'm in, I've sat and played songs, worship songs, and like Bridge Over Troubled Water and Imagine and stuff like that for the church people and the people in the recovery community. And that was something where I was all stripped down, and it wasn't Donnie V. It was just, you know, the same, you know, the little naked, you know, basically with clothes on, of course, because they'd been laughing at me. Or playing with Louie, my little nephew, little shit heels, Guilt and Shame, playing at Hayes for Horses and Butterface Love and getting chased out of town by the same recovery people that we might as well have been wearing Ku Klux Klan outfits in Episcopalian church singing Mammy when we were doing that.
Right on, brother. I hear you.
I mean, there's so many, you know, it's hard to say. My first time on a big stage, you know, it's just, you don't know. It's the first time you sit there and see your first time your video comes on MTV, here on the radio. It's just, there's so much, you know, it's hard. It's like, what's your favorite child that you have, you know?
Right. Take all exactly, your man. Exactly.
Which is your favorite? Who's your favorite out of all of your children, and why?
Right, you know? Exactly, brother, exactly. Yeah. Hey, the next track I want to talk about is called Wrapped Around My Middle Finger. How about some history?
That song's pretty self-explanatory. It's kind of a song of admission of guilt on my part, speaking for other rock and roll singers, of the shit we get away with because we're rock and roll singers, and you know, and why we get away with it. And it's just basically, you know, acknowledging that it's part of the job. You know, it's not like intentionally trying to fuck you up or fuck you around. It's just this is what we do.
Right on.
You know what I mean,
right.
if you're attracted to the rock and roll singer of instead of the person in the band, well, here's what happens. You know what I mean? And it's not a bad song. It's not a negative song. It's a positive one. Sexy. You know, I belt it out and sing the shit out of it, and it's aggressive, and there's a good lineup of guys in the studio.
There's
one on there with Kip Winger. Kip Winger did one with me on there.
Oh, that's
called
awesome.
Now You Know.
But I'll tell you what, this song here, Wrapped Around My Middle Finger, is a great tune. And let's go ahead and let the listeners hear it with Donnie V on Power Rock Podcast. Crank it up. Whoa! Donnie, listen, man, we are going to go ahead and we're going to close this show out. And what I want to do is I want to ask you one more question. The question is this. What type of legacy would you like to leave to your friends, family, and fans when you pass on?
that I tried, despite everything and all of the odds and everything going against me and everything going with me, that I tried to add to everyone's life, and my intentions and my heart were to add and not take away from anyone's life. It was to give something in the name of good, as opposed to in the name of negativity in their lives. And if I can be remembered that way, this guy, despite what everybody said, despite all his demons, was a sweet, caring, kind soul, just very colorful, and I guess he batshit crazy. Crazy as a shithouse rat, you know what I mean? But that comes with the territory, and that he did his job, and he went back home to where his energy spreads and will funnel its way somewhere else, you know, and right up the Tucci of some other fine piece of energy.
that's an awesome answer. And Donnie, I want to say to you, yeah, it is an awesome answer, man. It comes from the heart. But we're going to go ahead and close it out, man. And what I want to say to you, my friend, is that I truly wish you the utmost success, man, in all that you do, and that you continue what we call this journey of life, man. My prayer, how's that, if that's okay? My prayer for you is that you just touch lives, man, and just keep rocking the hell out of people, man, because you are a legend, and people love you, people respect you, and I can't say enough about how I just wish good things. I pray for good things for you, man. I really, truly
do. Jim, I pray for good things for you too, and the rest of the world, and everyone who's hurting for some battling or this and that. And I pray even for the ones who are doing so amazingly well that they're fucking everybody else, that they finally get the message somehow. And I pray for their souls Jim, we gotta be thankful that it's not like a genie bottle where we only get like three prayers where we have to spend one on each other.
Prayers
that we need. Thank you so much. And that's what it's all about. And that's what I'm all about. I've always have been about. Now I think I can just do a better job of it. And thank God I still have my hair, you know.
There you go, man.
Yeah. And I just came back from the eye doctor, and I'm getting some glasses, and I can't see as well, but they're still blue, and I can still sing. And the new songs that I'm working on right now, I'll tell the title of the first one that I'm going to put out, and it should be out very soon. It's called I Could Save the World, and it's probably my favorite song I've ever written, and it's like an up-tempo pop song, and it's not real heavy, but it's rocking, and it's pretty fucking cool, and it's smart, you know?
That is awesome. Well, Donnie, like I said, man, we're going to go ahead and close the show out. Keep rocking, brother. So there you have it, an interview with Donnie V of Enough's Enough. And what we're going to do, friends, is we're going to go ahead and close this show out with one more song. This one here is called Strength.